This podcast contains the personal stories, opinions, and experiences of its speakers rather than those of Breast Cancer Now. Welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast, providing support and information to anyone affected by breast cancer. I'm Laura Price, and I'm the host of the Breast Cancer Now podcast. I'm a food writer and author, and I live with secondary breast cancer. This episode, we're going to be talking to Claire O'Donnell from Make Seconds Count, a UK-based charity that gives hope to people living with secondary breast cancer. This is something Claire has direct experience of, as she, like me, is living with secondary breast cancer. We're talking to Claire today because Breast Cancer Now has actually teamed up with Make Seconds Count on their Clinical Trials Information Service, which is part of their mission to facilitate access to patient trials. Claire will be sharing various aspects of this really important area of breast cancer treatment. We'll also be talking about the work that Make Seconds Count is doing to fund breast cancer research, to support patients, and to raise awareness and understanding of secondary breast cancer. Claire, welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Could you tell us, first of all, about your diagnosis and your experience of secondary breast cancer, please?
Of course. I was diagnosed with primary breast cancer in October 2015, and so went through treatment as you do. So had mastectomy, radiotherapy, and then had a scan at the end of that, hoping to be given the all clear. But there was discovered there was some lesions showing on the scan, and it was confirmed in March of 2016. That I had bone mets. So I have mets to my sternum, my ribs, and my lower back. And so, yeah, that was 2016. Seems a long time ago, but yeah. So I've been living with secondary breast cancer since that point.
And it's not the first time we've talked about secondary breast cancer on this podcast, but for anyone who is perhaps coming to it for the first time, could you just tell us what secondary breast cancer means?
Of course. Secondary breast cancer is when the initial tumour has spread from the breast and travelled to another part of the body, another organ, therefore becoming incurable. It's treatable, but it becomes an incurable at that stage. So it's when the initial tumour has spread to another part of the body.
And I know that's it, this whole incurable but treatable is quite hard for a lot of people to get their heads around, understandably, because it's quite confusing. Is there anything you can elaborate on in terms of that to help us to understand?
I mean, I guess looking at it from my own perspective and my own experience, it's basically getting your head around the fact that there isn't almost, you have to take the cure part of it away from, you know, your primary diagnosis, you're always aiming for that all clear, you know, and moving on with your life, I guess. But the incurable aspect becomes, I guess, your mindset changes and you have to learn to live with cancer. You have to learn to have that be part of your life every day based on your treatments or your side effects or symptoms. So I guess it becomes just a whole new way of having to live your life. You can treat it and you can live well. I certainly have experience of that at the moment. But that doesn't mean it's not a difficult thing to live with. I struggle more mentally with the daily struggles of living with secondary breast cancer. And, you know, while my cancer is stable and asleep, as they say, I do have a million side effects that comes with that. So really, I'm battling that more than anything at the moment. So, yeah, I think it's just, for me, it's just having to adapt to a new way of thinking and living and trying to remain as upbeat as possible while doing that.
Yeah, that's a really good way of explaining it. So, essentially, you will never not have cancer.
Yes.
It doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be suffering from the actual effects of cancer, but...
Exactly. There's a lot of days where the cancer actually doesn't affect me. It might be more a side effect or a pain or a niggle, but I'm still living with cancer and it's not going to go anywhere. So it's about keeping it at bay, I guess. It's about keeping it asleep and being able to maintain that level of treatment, I guess. Because we all know at some point things will change, so you aim to have as long as possible on whatever treatment you happen to be on. But for me, it was a real mind flip and it took me a long time to get my head around it, and I'm in a much better place now. But the first couple of years of my diagnosis was very up and down. I'm happy now that I live quite a happy life, and you know, I live well with it. But it wasn't always like that. I think it takes time, and I think it takes experience of what secondary breast cancer actually is.
Absolutely. You know? So tell us, so what treatment are you on? Have you been on the same treatment for the whole time? Because it's been quite a few years now.
Yeah,
hasn't it?
It's been quite a few years. I'm very lucky in that I've been stable now for 7 years. Wow. And I'm still on first line treatment, so I feel incredibly lucky. And my wonder drug, as I like to call it, is letrozole. And that's all I'm on. I do have a bone strengthener that I take daily. And I used to take a Zoladex injection to shut down my ovaries, but I've since had an oophorectomy procedure to remove my ovaries to take that part of that treatment away. So, letrozole and a bone strengthener is keeping me going at the moment. And I'm doing really, really well on it. So I can't complain.
That's fantastic news. And you mentioned first line treatment. Can you just explain that term as well? Because all of these things were new to me, like just a year ago. So yeah. I know a lot of people won't
absolutely
be familiar.
It was new to me at the time as well. So I basically say first line treatment because it's the first treatment I've had for secondary breast cancer, and it has remained. So I haven't had a progression. I haven't had a change in my circumstances. So if I did get to that point and they would change my treatment, that would then become my second line. Yep. So it's looked at as each drug that you have, whether it be your first or your second or your third, is how. So I'm, like I say, I'm incredibly lucky to still be on first line treatment 8 years on. I know that's not the case for everyone, so yeah, I feel very lucky indeed.
Yeah, we've got to be incredibly grateful and thankful to the people who
and incredibly hopeful
and
yes
make these
absolutely
drugs,
without that we're not going to get anywhere, are we?
Yeah. So tell us about Make Seconds Count. Why was the charity set up and what is its mission?
So the charity was founded by Lisa Fleming, who was a secondary breast cancer patient, and at the time Lisa felt there wasn't really anything out there for the secondary breast cancer community. She was struggling to find support and help, and she wanted to set up a charity that would help with that. So Make Seconds Count is, I think we're coming up to our fifth birthday soon, which is incredible. We've done so much since then. What we do is we focus on three pillars, which is research, support and education. And our aim is to be, I guess, a place that you can come to for any queries that you may have about secondary breast cancer, whether it's wanting to understand it as a newly diagnosed person, or if you're further down the line like myself and maybe things are changing and you want the best advice or the right place to go. That's what Make Seconds Count aims to do. One of the big things we do is fund research into secondary breast cancer. So, and the things that we tend to focus on are what you would, I guess what they say is near time. So it's things that's not necessarily going to be 10 or 15 years down the line, but it might be something that would support the community in the here and now. So whether that be a wellbeing thing or, you know, a drug, or might look into sleep, or it's funding those types of research that will help you live well with secondary breast cancer, which is a huge part of what Make Seconds Count is about. We're there to provide hope for not only the secondary breast cancer patient, but their friends and family. So the three pillars that we work on aim to do that via educating them about secondary breast cancer, not only the patient, but maybe the general public, the wider public who maybe don't understand. So I guess there's different sides, different tales that you can tell, different stories you can tell, and support, which is the side that I'm mainly focused on with Make Seconds Count, is providing support daily in the here and now, whether that be through online services or in-person groups and activities, retreats, well-being. We do yoga and mindfulness and breath work. So yeah, we try and cover as many aspects of life with secondary breast cancer as possible, in the hope that it's making it easier for the community to live with secondary breast cancer.
And what does your role involve?
Well, I am support and patient engagement manager. I was the support coordinator for the charity. I actually started out as a volunteer. I was a patient champion when I found Make Seconds Count I myself was looking for community and help and found them. So my role has been to establish the support services because we didn't really have anything. Then COVID hit and we found that a lot of our community were incredibly isolated. So that's where our first support service was born, which is Tea and Chat, which was basically an online programme where you could join us for an hour and chat. It could be about cancer, it could be about life, anything and everything. And that's still going strong to this day, but we've introduced now in-person setups for all around the UK. So my current role is to try and establish those that are here and find new places to set up these groups. And a big part of my job is setting up the retreats, which is a couple of days away for members of the community to just make friends, to meet other people in the same situation in a safe space and provide them with some lovely food, some lovely accommodation, some mindfulness, some yoga. Just really give them a place to go and experience what it's like to meet other people in a similar situation. And we found that that retreat service, I'm not sure there's many other people offering that, so Make Seconds Count have tried really hard to grow that. The plan next year, I think, is actually to have 6. So this year we did 4. So we're always aiming to, you know, improve what we've currently offer and actually allow more people to find and take part in these services. So,
and
yeah.
How can patients access that?
They can access it via our website. We basically, and normally around January time, we'll announce what all the activities are going to be and where they're going to be. And you can sign up for all of them if you wish, or if there's only one that you're interested in, you can sign up. And then what we do is it's a random draw. So it's open to everyone, but we do firmly believe in it being fully funded so that, you know, you're not held back from. So we will provide travel expenses and we'll pay fully for the retreat, so they're not out of pocket, hopefully. So yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. We're very, very proud of it. Yeah. Everything will be on the support section of the website at the start of the year. So what I would suggest is, if people are interested, is to maybe sign up to our newsletter, which you can do so from the homepage of our website, because that will ultimately be what lets them know that, you know, the retreats are live and ready to sign up for. So they're always very much oversubscribed. So we try very hard to bring as many people as possible. So it will always be someone who's never experienced a retreat before that will take priority. Right. You can apply again if you wish, but it would always be a last minute place if, you know, someone pulls out for whatever reason. So it's not like you can't experience it twice. It's just we always offer it to someone who's never been on one first. Yeah. So each year we're always trying to add more to it. So yeah. Takes a lot of time though and a lot of work.
Well, we'll put the links in the show notes so that any listeners can have a look at
Thank
that.
Thank you.
You mentioned that your mindset from the first 2 years of your secondary breast cancer diagnosis to now, sort of 8 years on, was really, really different. Was there an active thing that you did? And how did it change?
I've thought about this a lot, actually, I think, just recently, because a few members of the community have asked me a similar question. And I think it was more just, I think there needs to be that level of stability that comes from your scans, because I think you're not really going to trust that mindset without that. So I think in the first couple of years, I was very much like a rabbit caught in headlights, and I'd obviously aimed for being all clear and moving on, and that sort of ripped away from you almost straight away, and you have to get used to this whole other way of thinking. And I'd lost my mum to secondary breast cancer as well back in the 90s, so I obviously had that fear that instantly became, oh, this is my life, this is what's going to happen to me. And I couldn't shift that. And I think what happened was, A, finding Make Seconds Count, getting really involved in their volunteer programme, spending a lot of time with other members of the community. And I think just learning to share and not be afraid. There were times when I was really, really very, very scared that, you know, I wasn't going to see my niece and nephew grow up. They were very young at the time, and I think there's just a lot of things that come into your brain that you feel that you've got no control over. And over time, what I've managed to do is take a bit of that control back. But in all honesty, I'm not sure where I would be had I not had stable scans to back that up. I think that's a really important part of it, is because in order to trust your treatment and trust what's happening, I think you need the scan to back it up. And only then do you maybe start to let go a little bit and not feel so tense about absolutely everything. And I've obviously had the luxury of 5, 6, 7 years of not many changes, not many ups and downs, whereas other people I know are constantly having to change how they think. So I guess it's come easier to me. But then working within Make Seconds Count and with the community, I've seen what other people go through as well. So I guess it's a bit of both. But yeah, I think it's just trusting that, you know, you are stable, your treatment's working.
Yeah.
And that just allowed me a little bit of freedom, I guess, to think about the future again. And obviously now further down the line, I've saw my niece and nephew grow up, which is what I didn't think would happen. I've also realised that the treatment that was available to my mum in the 90s, it's night and day what's available now. So there's obviously that as well. And knowing that there's a lot of other treatments out there as well helps, I think. Certainly for me, I know there's a list of things that I can move on to. So it's not necessarily going to be the end of the world if I do have a progression. It will take. So I think it's lots of things that get you there.
Yeah.
But those, I would say, would be the main things for me.
Yeah, absolutely. You obviously came to Make Seconds Count in the first place when you were in this really vulnerable position, having been diagnosed, and now you're a little bit better, you're doing well, you're stable, but you're spending a lot of time working with and living with secondary breast cancer. Do you need to escape that sometimes? And if so, what are your coping
sometimes
strategies?
I will be the first to admit that sometimes I'm not very good at doing that either, because I get very involved. I feel a lot of, you know, responsibility to the community that we've built and that we look after. So, and it has for a long time been just me doing that side of it, I guess, for the charity, obviously with support from other team members, but it's really just been me that's been kind of interacting with them. So there are moments, there are ladies that I've lost in the community that I've got very close to, and I've had to step back and I've had to step away and take a moment, to grieve for them, I guess, but also to make sure that I'm still in a good place, because I can't support them if I'm not in a good place. So I'm very lucky that Make Seconds Count are incredibly, we've got a really good team who look after each other. And they're also aware that I'm a patient, so that they're very good at making sure that I'm maybe not doing too much, or if they need to tell me to step back a bit, because like I say, I'm not always the best at doing that, because I like distraction. I like things to keep my mind occupied. And I find that I've got a real passion for the community and for Make Seconds Count. So sometimes it does overtake. But yeah, you always have to make sure that you're all right first and foremost. And I do struggle when I lose ladies from the community. It's hard. It happens a lot, sadly. But I think you just have to try and ground yourself again and know that everybody's story's different as well, and that just because that's happened to them, that's not what's happening to me. And I guess you have to remember that. It's very easy to get lost in the, you know, the sadness and the overwhelming responsibility you have to the community that you're also trying to pick up at the same time, because they'll have also lost someone that they've got close to. So yeah, I think it's a real balancing act. Sometimes I'm all right at it, other times I'm not. I'm quite happy to admit that I'm not always the best at it, but I do try really hard to look after myself as well.
It's a fine balance, because someone else who doesn't have secondary breast cancer could do your job, but they wouldn't do it with the same level of understanding, and they wouldn't have that same connection.
I think
with the
exactly
community.
That. I think there's a level of understanding about what it's like to live with it. There's an empathy there for, I may not know what your experience is necessarily with your drugs, but I understand what it's like to live with it and to have to constantly be on that roller coaster as such. So I think in that regard, it's beneficial to have someone that understands. And I think the community trusts that, and they trust the charity for those reasons, because they've got people who understand, you know, working within the charity.
Yeah.
And I think that goes a long way.
I'm Gareth, the editor of Vita magazine. Vita is Breast Cancer Now's magazine for anyone affected by breast cancer. It's full of inspiring real-life stories, expert tips on coping with the effects of breast cancer, and articles on health and well-being. In our new spring issue, you can read about a mother and daughter who were both diagnosed with breast cancer 12 years apart, find out the latest in breast cancer research, get tips on coping with fatigue, read about the benefits of getting outdoors, and much more. Subscribe to Vita now at breastcancernow.org/Vita.
Can you tell us a bit about the partnership between Breast Cancer Now and Make Seconds Count, mm-hmm. and how the two charities are working together?
Yeah, of course. Our Patient Trial Advocate Service started in 2021 after some feedback we'd had from a survey that we'd put out to the community about things that they felt were missing or that they needed. And what came from that was that there really isn't a lot of access to clinical trials, and there isn't a lot out there for, you know, those living with secondary breast cancer who are maybe at a point where they want to know what else is available to them, or you know, something that will give them hope. So the PTA service started, launched in 2021, and it started off as a pilot in Scotland, in a very small area of Scotland that we used to, but it was very, very successful very quickly. There was a lot of referrals, and it became very clear very quickly that we were getting a lot of referrals from people out with that pilot area, because there isn't really this service anywhere else. It's unique to Make Seconds Count. And it was a way for us, with the education pillar as well as the other stuff, is to educate people about clinical trials and, you know, maybe to dispense some of the myths that there is around clinical trials. And Breast Cancer Now have been incredibly supportive of the Patient Trial Advocate Service, in that they've been very much signposting our service to their nurses and making everyone aware of the service and referring patients to it, because they're also very aware of how important clinical trials are to the secondary breast cancer community. And one amazing thing that they've done is that they granted us a £20,000 grant to go towards the Patient Trial Advocate Service to help us continue it, to hopefully put that towards maybe introducing more nurses. We currently have three who work all over the UK. So this money will help us continue the service, hopefully expand it, and continue to offer people an insight into what clinical trials are. And our nurses effectively sit you down and talk to you and talk through your questions. Obviously, if you've got any questions, they'll answer those. But even if it's just simply a phone call that you want to understand a bit more about clinical trials, there's no obligation to take it any further. But if you want to, the point is that they'll go away and do all the research for you, which I know I would find incredibly confusing if I had to try and understand those databases. I wouldn't be able to do it. So the nurses are very good at that. They'll go away and they'll research it all, and then they'll send you all your information back, and they'll also notify your oncologist that, with their permission obviously, that you're interested in clinical trials and want to know more about it. So I guess a lot of it's about empowering the patient, but it's also, I guess, making clinical trials themselves more accessible. Because I was very confused about clinical trials and didn't really know a lot about them. And I've found out more through just this service alone and working with the fabulous nurses that we've got. So yeah, Breast Cancer Now, I think we're really keen to work with other organisations and charities who are passionate about the secondary breast cancer community and services like this, which are going to help. And Breast Cancer Now have been incredibly supportive. Our nurses have gone and spoken to Breast Cancer Now groups of patients as well to explain the process and the service. So it obviously gives us access to more patients who are maybe not directly members of the M2C community, but, you know, maybe they don't know who Make Seconds Count are at this point, but Breast Cancer Now are allowing them to come to our service, yeah. I guess, which is fantastic.
And is that anywhere in the UK?
It is. And I think for some people, there's maybe been a bit of confusion in that they maybe think that we're a Scottish charity only, but we support UK-wide and a lot of our services are UK-wide. So the PTA is accessible for anyone in the UK. Our support services are accessible for anyone in the UK. In fact, we have quite a lot of groups that are now out with the UK. So I think it's really just quite important for us to let the community know that, you know, it's not Scotland only. We're, yeah, UK-wide for sure.
Fantastic. Thank you. So what is a clinical trial, if you could sort of... Because I think we all have an idea in our heads of what it means, but I don't really know much about what it is, what it does.
Yeah. And I would have to say, I kind of agree. I'm not an expert in, by any means. I know a clinical trial is there to hopefully establish another line of treatment. And it's about, I guess you need patients to be part of these things to see if this drug is going to work. But like I say, I'm not an expert on clinical trials at all. That's why we've got our fabulous nurses who do that. So what I would say is, if you do want any information, I would make an appointment. I would book and speak to the nurses. And there's no waiting list. You can simply book an appointment online.
Through Make Seconds Count.
Through the Make Seconds Count website. And it can be a date that you choose. So it can be convenient for you. And the nurse will phone you and talk to you and explain. But I guess in the simplest terms, it's about, without the clinical trials, we're not going to have access to new drugs. So a clinical trial is all about, will it find you another line of treatment? And as a secondary breast cancer community, that's exactly what we need and want, is, you know, access to more treatment lines. And I guess they can only come from a clinical trial. But as I say, I'm not an expert myself. I've tried really hard to learn as much as I can, but our nurses are far better at all that than I am.
So is a clinical trial only for someone who's exhausted all of their lines of treatment, or is it something that you could ask for at the beginning of your diagnosis?
I think that's one of the myths that we as a charity have tried to dispel, because actually you don't have to wait until, and in fact it's probably more in your favour to do when you've not exhausted all your lines of treatment, because at that point I guess you're going to be quite unwell. So my advice would be, if you're interested in a clinical trial, ask about it as early as possible. Even if it's just for the nurses to research what's currently available to you, it will give you that knowledge, and you can then make your oncologist aware, you know, that you're interested in clinical trials. But I think that's one of the big myths that we tried to dispel at the beginning of the PTA, was that it's not purely for when you've exhausted all options. You can look and see what's available to you at any stage. I haven't done it personally because I'm stable on first-line treatment, but I always had it in my head that should I have a progression, that would be something that I would be interested in doing, and I would want to find out more at that stage. But yeah, I wouldn't leave it until the you know, when you've exhausted all your lines of treatment. I think it's more advantageous for you to do that a lot earlier on in treatment.
So before this service came about, how would a patient access a clinical trial? Is it something they would ask their oncologist about, or?
I would imagine that would be the way it would have to have been, yeah. I know there's databases which list all the current clinical trials that are available in the UK. I think there's about six of them. But having had a look at one of them, I was incredibly confused by everything. I didn't really understand the language. I didn't really understand any of it. So I can imagine that before this service, that would be what it would be like for you if you were trying to navigate this yourself. So I think the beauty of the PTA service is that they do all that for you, and they can understand all that information, and then they'll report that back to you and feed that back to you in a way that you understand. One of the other things that the charity did off the back of that was, we've taken all that information from all those databases and we've listed it as a clinical trial registry on our website. And it lists it all very clearly, and it's updated every month. So at any point, you can really see what's available. And I think it's laid out in such a way that the language is easier to understand, which I think is also really important, because we don't necessarily know all the medical jargon. And I think this is another way to just make clinical trials more accessible.
And are they accessible to all patients, private or NHS?
Yes, I believe so. Yes, I think there's obviously differences in how you would maybe access them, depending on whether you're an NHS patient or a private patient. But as far as I'm aware, clinical trials are available to anyone and everyone who would like to access them.
Brilliant. You're very much making me want to go and learn more and go and call one of these nurses. I know you're not an expert on clinical mm-hmm. trials, but I know that there are strict eligibility yes. requirements for getting on a trial. Mm-hmm. And then when you're on a trial, I believe you yes. are regularly tested.
I believe so.
And there is a chance that you may be removed from the trial yeah. if you're not hitting certain
yes.
you know, health targets. I don't know if targets is the right word. When I realised that that was the case, it struck me that it would be something that would be mentally mm-hmm. terrifying and exhausting yeah. and confusing. Is there mental health support for people who are on clinical trials, do you know?
If you're accessing it via Make Seconds Count, we have other services that would hopefully be of use, as in support groups that we have online, or you know, the teen chat service that we do, which runs monthly. So I would hope there's always someone that you could speak to. But yeah, I know that the criteria is often very, very strict. And in some cases, you may not even be eligible for that trial because you don't meet those criteria, which I guess must be one of the most difficult things mm. about clinical trials. If you're, you know, if you're, I guess, at a point where you feel that's what you need, but then if you can't access it, almost it must be so soul-destroying. But yeah, I would imagine that must be something that is part and parcel of what the clinical trial is. Mm. I would hope it would offer more than just the clinical trial itself.
Yeah, I don't know. I suspect maybe also it's organisations like yours and like Breast Cancer
Now.
Well,
that's it. Breast Cancer Now, Make Seconds Count. I guess we're there as backup. I would like to think that, you know that you have these services that you can access. So if you are struggling mentally with maybe what the criteria is, or whether you're struggling with something about the clinical trial, I would like to think with our community there's a lot of questions that are asked, there's a lot of shared experience within our community groups. So if you're sharing that experience, you're picking up those things mm. and I would hope that that would be helpful. And I imagine Breast Cancer Now groups would be exactly the same, that if you're sharing experiences, it can only help.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the situation like in terms of funding and research for secondary breast cancer patients?
Mm-hmm. I think it's difficult. I think it's always hard to, a lot of what we do in our fundraising is to fund research primarily. That's the biggest part of what Make Seconds Count does. Our support services have certainly grown, but the biggest part of what we do in terms of fundraising is to fundraise for research, because there isn't that much out there. And I guess it's about doing as much as we can to fund projects that are going to be of use and of benefit. I think there's other charities out there that fund, I would say, maybe long-term research that may take 10, 15 years to come to fruition. I think for us, we try really hard to find things that are maybe going to be of benefit more, you know, in near time. Because a lot of that's really important to those who live with second breast cancer, and you are on a timeline. I don't like to think of it like that, but for a lot of people it's quite urgent, you know, and you do need things to come round a lot quicker, and it's not the quickest thing to have new drugs come round. So yeah, certainly fundraising into research is the most important part.
And where does the fundraising come from?
For Make Seconds Count, it comes in a number of ways. We're very lucky in that we have a very active community who fundraise for us by doing, you know, their own fundraising. We get funding through trusts and foundations via applying for things like that. So, and obviously there's a lot of corporate fundraising that you can access. So I think it's just about assessing as much as you can. But we, as a charity, are incredibly lucky that we have a very active community who fundraise daily for us, and who get up to all sorts of antics on our behalf, and a lot of them do like to say, I want this to go towards research, and that's something that the charity can do. If you want your fundraising money to go say you don't want it to go towards anything other than research, that's exactly what would happen. Great. So, yeah.
That's cool. I don't know if everyone does that. As someone with secondary breast cancer myself, I know there's a huge amount of self-advocacy involved in everything from diagnosis to treatment.
Yep.
And becoming a part of a clinical trial requires a real level of proactivity that many mm-hmm. patients just won't have the time yeah. or energy for. What kind of support is there out there for secondary breast cancer patients who don't necessarily have the time or energy to, mm-hmm. you know, do all the work?
I mean, again, I think that's where the Patient Trial Advocate Service comes in, is that they can take on that burden, I guess, if that's the right word to use. But they can be doing all the heavy lifting and the hard work, and they can find what's out there for you. And then they can take that information to their oncologist, because I think it's not wrong to say that oncologists don't often have a lot of time either. So the PTA service is helping them as well as the patient. So I think, you know, if I understand that, you know, you are going to be tired and it may be that you don't have it in you to do that, but that's where I think you should utilise these services that are now created for that reason. And the PTA nurses, what's great about it is that it's not just once. If you want to go back and speak to them again, you just make another appointment and you can follow up. We've had people that come back 2-3 times just to update, you know, their situation, or maybe want to check if there's anything new. So I think what's good about that service itself is that it's taking on all that hard work for you, but you're still benefiting as a patient. And obviously our hope is that you would access a trial. We don't always find out that information, but that ultimately is what the service is aiming to do, is to get people onto clinical trials. So I think that's where I would just say use those services. That's what they're there for. You can still advocate for yourself, but you can have someone else do what may be the hard stuff, and you can still be very proactive in other ways.
And if there's someone listening to this podcast who is perhaps a spouse or a family mm-hmm. member of someone with breast cancer, yeah. Can they get in touch with Make yes. Seconds Count and, you know, do all that liaising on
yes.
their behalf?
Yes, it doesn't have to be the patient themselves. You can have your friend or your family or your husband or your daughter. We've actually had that a number of times where it's been someone else. And you don't need to know a lot of background information either. There's very basic questions that we'll ask. And even if you don't know the answers, it's not a deal breaker. That's where the chat with the nurse comes in. So I guess as long as that person is aware that someone's making the referral, and, you know, that there will be a conversation at some point. But yeah, anyone can make the referral. And that's another thing that I think is really, really useful, because it may be that you're not maybe well enough to do that. So maybe your spouse will do that for you. Yeah. But yeah, the nurses are happy to speak to anyone, and anyone can make that referral for you.
Brilliant. Well, I'm sold. I'm definitely going to make the call myself.
Absolutely. I think for no other reason, and it allows you just to learn a bit more. Mm. And I always think knowledge is power. The longer I've been on this secondary breast cancer, I hate the word journey, but the longer I've been on this journey, I guess, I've learned that the more you know, the easier things can be for you.
Yeah.
And I've certainly learned a lot through the nurses and through the service itself, but also from the feedback we've had. We've had 100% feedback on the service, positive feedback, and that no matter whether it goes as far as identifying trials for you, but it may even be as simple as explaining what a trial is. And I'm sure the nurses can do that far better than I have today. But yeah, absolutely. I would recommend at least... Like I say, there's no obligation to take it any further, but if you just even like to find out more, you know, about the service or about what's open to you, I would definitely go ahead and make an appointment with the nurses.
Where can people find out more about Make Seconds Count?
So our website, which is www.makeseconds.co.uk, you'll find all of our services there. You'll find everything on our research, support and education pillars, and within the support section is the patient trial advocate section, so you can make a referral via that booking form online. But even if you just want to find out a bit more about what secondary breast cancer is, there's a whole big section on that about talking about whether it's in your bones or in your liver or brain, or, you know, it tries the website's really useful for just trying to gather as much information as possible. So yeah, that's where I would always point people in the direction of first.
And we'll put the links in the show notes, but the spelling of seconds is 2NDS, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I would like to end by asking you the one question we ask everyone on this podcast, which is, what is the one thing you would like to see change in the coming years in terms of secondary breast cancer diagnosis, treatment, research, everything surrounding that?
I mean, for me, I guess, and this is probably coming from a personal experiences, that I would love for the doctors or the nurses or whoever to maybe just respond when you come with a query necessarily. Like, I had a lot of time where I had to fight to say that, you know, I had this condition and they were telling me it was mastitis for 6 weeks and it wasn't mastitis. You know, I had no kids, I wasn't breastfeeding, but almost I felt I had to fight. And I feel like if I hadn't had to have waited those 8 weeks, my own prognosis may have been different. And I think for secondary breast cancer specifically, there's a lot of ladies that go back to their GPs or go back to their team and say, I've got a bad back, or, you know, I've got a pain. And it's often they're not joining the dots and they're not going, well, this person had breast cancer, why don't we just investigate this? And it takes a long, long time, but by that point it may be too late and you may be, you know, further along in your secondary breast cancer journey as you would need to be. So for me, I would like the patient to be believed a bit more when, you know, or at least investigated, whether that be with a scan or checking your notes and seeing that actually they're not just coming because they've got a sore back, they're coming because they're concerned about something else. So for me personally, I would like that to be a bit more accessible. And obviously lots more research, lots more treatment options.
Yeah,
that would be wonderful.
Absolutely. Well, I agree. And thank you so much for all the work you're doing with Make Seconds Count. It's
thank
so
you.
Important to this community.
Thank you.
And Claire, thank you for coming on the podcast.
No, thank you for having me. And thanks for letting me talk a little bit about what Make Seconds Count does and about our patient trial advocate service. We're incredibly proud of it. So thank you for letting us share.
Thank you. If you enjoyed this episode of the Breast Cancer Now podcast, make sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please also leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and perhaps recommend it to someone you think would find it helpful. The more people we can reach, the more we can get Breast Cancer Now's vital resources to those who need them. You can find support and information on our website, breastcancernow.org, and you can follow Breast Cancer Now on social media at Breast Cancer Now. All the links mentioned in this episode are listed in the show notes in your podcast app. Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast.